Khan tells the visiting UN High Commissioner for Refugees that the country has no capacity to provide additional services to incoming Afghan asylum seekers. The former head of Israel's military intelligence confesses to the regime's role in the U.S. assassination of top Iranian general Qasem Soleimani. Also, Saudi warplanes attacked the international airport of Yemen's capital Sana'a hours after pounding Jauf and Ma'rib provinces almost 40 times. Thank you for joining us. You know, with our top story this hour, Iranian foreign minister says his country doesn't have the capacity to provide additional services to incoming Afghan refugees. According to Hossein Amir Abdollahian, more than 500,000 Afghan students are enjoying free education in Iran. He said authorities have been vaccinating Afghan refugees and Iranian nationals alike against COVID-19. He noted that the United Nations aid for Afghan asylum seekers is too small compared to what Iran has provided for them. Amir Abdollahian made the comments in a meeting with the UN's visiting High Commissioner for Refugees. Filippo Grandi, for his part, praised Iran's extensive support for the new wave of Afghan refugees. Thousands of Afghans have been crossing into Iran on a daily basis since the Taliban took over the country in August. We have spoken to political commentator E. Michael Jones about Afghanistan's refugee crisis. He says the United Nations has done nothing to protect Afghans seeking refuge in Iran.
The wave of refugees is not something positive. I mean, God bless the Iranians for helping these people out. But this doesn't change the fact that they should remain in Afghanistan. Someone should take care of the situation in Afghanistan. Apparently the United Nations is not doing it that well. We're living through an era where migration is being weaponized. It's being weaponized against Europe. It's being weaponized on the southern border against the United States by people within the United States. The Democratic Party favors this type of unlimited migration. This is an exceptional circumstance that needs to be corrected by having the people go back to where they came from. This is not the Iranians should be working to get these people back to Afghanistan, doing whatever they can to do that.
Iran condemns the Israeli aggression against Syria and calls on the UN Security Council to help end the occupation of Syria's Golan Heights.
We strongly condemn all aggressions of the Israeli regime against Syria and reaffirm Syria's inherent right to self-defense and to respond at the time and place of its choosing. The Security Council must compel the Israeli regime to end the occupation of the Syrian Golan and also stop immediately its aggressions against Syria.
Iran's deputy ambassador to the UN also called for an end to illegal foreign military presence on Syrian soil. Zahra Ershadi said the presence of uninvited forces is a violation of international law and the UN Charter. While urging the withdrawal of American forces from the crisis-hit Arab country, the Iranian diplomat condemned their attacks on Syrian civilians. Elsewhere in her remarks, Ershadi highlighted the deteriorating humanitarian situation in Syria. She underlined that sanctions imposed on the Arab country are hampering the work of international and local humanitarian agencies there. Investigative journalist Rick Sterling says Lebanon is also a victim of Israeli aggression as the regime violates its airspace to launch attacks against Syria.
Unfortunately, that's right. What we've seen happen is the UN Charter being trampled on. And this is one good example. Another example is on the Israeli aggression against Syria. And it was interesting to see over the weekend, Lebanese President General Aoun was very vocally condemning the Israeli attacks, the air attacks on Syria, because it's a violation of Lebanese airspace. So Israel is violating not just the rights of not just one country, but two countries in these actions. But it's very good to see what took place a few months ago at the UN General Assembly, where a new group was formed. It's called the Group of Friends in Defense of the Charter of the United Nations. And many countries have joined this this grouping, which is going to try to reverse that trend and that trampling of the UN Charter, and to start to reestablish it.
Israel openly admits its role in the assassination of Iran's top general Qasem Soleimani almost 2 years after the U.S. drone strike. Tehran is demanding the international community hold the perpetrators responsible, calls that continue to fall on deaf ears.
Israeli military intelligence chief Tamir Heyman has admitted in an interview that Tel Aviv was involved in the January 2020 assassination of Iran's top commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, in a drone strike that also killed Deputy Chief of Iraq's Popular Mobilization Unit, Abu Mehdi al-Muhandis, at Baghdad Airport. The headline, however, didn't come as a surprise given initial reports on the role of informants in tipping the CIA about the whereabouts of the Iranian general on the day of the U.S. drone strike. It's not the first time Israel has been involved in such operations against Iran either. The regime assassinated four Iranian scientists between 2010 and 2012. In November last year, Iran's top nuclear scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh was assassinated in an attack that Iran says has Israel's fingerprints all over it. Tehran also points its finger at Tel Aviv for multiple sabotage attacks that have recently hit Iran's nuclear facilities in an abortive attempt to undermine the country's nuclear program. Despite Iran's repeated calls on the international community to hold the perpetrators responsible for the dangerous adventurism, neither the United Nations nor self-proclaimed promoters of human rights in the West have called for accountability or made any meaningful attempt to prevent similar attacks. That's also true about Israel's military action on nations like Syria and the regime's atrocities against the people of Palestine, all of which are considered as blatant violation of international law.
Because of the protection of the United States in the United Nations Security Council, flat out, this is what enables Israel to perpetuate its rogue activity regionally and globally, to perpetuate its terrorism, to perpetuate its ethnic cleansing and genocide against the Palestinian people, to continually bomb neighboring countries almost daily. It is the protection of the United States in the United Nations that enables Israel to act in this continually terroristic and scofflaw manner.
That begs the question, wouldn't the lack of international accountability legitimize Israel's state terrorism and embolden the regime to intensify its aggression?
And Iran's capital Tehran has hosted the annual Quran competition. The annual event brings young Quran reciters from across the country to show off their Quranic knowledge. Yusuf Shabadi reports.
Divine verses are recited by the most euphonious voices here. And the best recitations will win the award of the 44th Quran competition in Iran. 200 contestants are competing in the Quranic event in two sections of female and male competitions and in seven different fields, including recitation, memorization, and interpretation.
Last year, the competition was held online due to pandemic. I'm so happy that this year is being held physically. I'm competing in recitation section, and I hope I will win the contest.
The Holy Quran was revealed to Prophet Muhammad some 14 centuries ago to teach humanity how to live in peace. It preaches us against any kind of discrimination and intolerance. So it's good to recite the Quran with a beautiful voice and win a prize here in this contest. But at the same time, we need to pay attention to the divine instructions in order to benefit from this holy book.
The event is organized by the Endowment and Charity Affairs Organization It says one of the major goals of this competition is to encourage the youth to keep their touch with the Holy Book of Quran at a time when technology has distracted societies from religious teachings.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran. Saudi warplanes carry out 3 airstrikes on Sana'a International Airport as the kingdom intensifies its war on Yemen. Yemen's Civil Aviation Authority says the strikes have disrupted services at the airport. It says there has been a halt to the delivery of humanitarian aid supplies following the air raids. The airport was targeted hours after Saudi warplanes reportedly carried out around 40 airstrikes across the provinces of Jowf and Ma'rib. Riyadh, along with some of its regional allies, launched a devastating war against its southern neighbor in 2015 to reinstate a friendly regime there. Hundreds of thousands of Yemenis, mostly civilians, have been killed in the onslaught. In the United States, health officials say Omicron now accounts for around 3/4 of COVID-19 cases in the country. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the new strain make up over 95% of new COVID cases in 3 Northwest states. Separately, the World Health Organization has warned that there is consistent evidence that Omicron is spreading a lot faster than previous variants. Concerns over highly contagious Omicron have prompted several European countries to tighten lockdown measures and toughen border controls to stem the spread of the strain. Germany has announced tougher restrictions on arrivals from the UK, requiring all British travelers to have a negative test result or undergo a 2-week quarantine upon entry. Russia expels 2 German diplomats in a tit-for-tat move after Berlin asked 2 Russian staffers to leave the country earlier this month. In a statement, the Foreign Ministry says it has informed the German ambassador that the 2 diplomats were declared persona non grata. It says the decision is a symmetrical response to expulsions of Russian diplomats. Berlin says the move will further deteriorate ties. Diplomatic row escalated after 2 Russian diplomats were expelled over a German court ruling implicating the Kremlin in the killing of a former Chechen commander. Tornike Kavtarashvili was gunned down in Berlin 2 years ago. Russia denies involvement in the murder and calls the verdict politically motivated. It has also warned that it will continue to respond to any confrontational moves. Chileans hit the streets to celebrate the victory of leftist Gabriel Boric against his far-right opponent in the country's presidential runoff. Tens of thousands of Boric supporters celebrated his win in the capital, Santiago, and other cities. The 35-year-old former protest leader secured nearly 56% of the votes to become Chile's youngest president. It took a 12-point lead over far-right populist José Antonio Kast. Boric and Kast emerged as the 2 leading contenders after none of the 7 candidates secured more than 50% in the first round last month. Kast has conceded defeat and congratulated Boric on his, quote, great triumph. Speaking to his supporters, the president-elect pledged to expand social rights and govern with fiscal responsibility.
We're going to expand social rights, and we'll do it with fiscal responsibility. We will do it while taking care of our macroeconomy. We will do it well, and that will allow us to improve pensions and health without having to go backwards afterwards. And we will have a balanced Congress that is already a reality, which means both an invitation and an obligation to dialogue.
Boric will be sworn in for a 4-year term starting from March next year. He will be dealing with some of Chile's big challenges, including high inflation, the coronavirus pandemic, and social unrest. Chile has been rocked by massive protests against inequality and corruption in recent years. Boric will also be in power for the approval of a new constitution that is in the process of drafting. People have gathered in London for the Palestine Festival 2021. The event celebrated Palestinian culture and food and called for an end to the occupation. Our correspondent Bianca Rahimi was there and filed this report.
The sights and smells of home, from Palestinian traditional clothes to signature Palestinian dishes. Roughly 6 million Palestinians live in exile after 73 years of illegal Israeli occupation, which denies them the right to return.
Events like this bring together Palestinians from all walks of life, but the main target is the younger generation.
It's very important to bring my children to an event like this, to learn more about Palestine, about the struggle of the Palestinian people. Myself, I was born in a refugee camp in the Gaza Strip. They were born in Britain. They probably have no connection with Palestine whatsoever. So it's very important that we bring our kids to these events to learn more about the struggle of their own people.
The public isn't really educated about the occupation that's going on in Palestine, and they kind of think just because it's going on for so long that it's something that's normal and dismissed, whereas events like this show us that it's not normal and we should fight for what we believe in.
It can never be just about art and culture. The festival, like the ones before, was also unapologetically political. The organizers called once again on the international community to end the occupation of Palestine. Former leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, was there to offer his support as well.
Nobody ever chooses to be a refugee. Nobody ever wants to leave their home, their community, their family, their place of birth, possibly never to return. They don't do it for fun. They do it out of desperation.
We asked Mr. Corbyn about the new Borders and Nationality Bill, which is being described as the most racist legislation in decades and could harm those seeking asylum in the UK.
Oppose the Borders and Nationality Bill. It's brutal, it's unnecessary, and it's demonising people who are desperate. Nobody gets into a boat to cross the English Channel unless they're really desperate. They are desperate people who end up on the shores of this country. They should be supported, they should be housed, they should be welcomed, because they're people fleeing from poverty, from oppression, and from environmental degradation.
The former Labour leader, who represents a growing number of British citizens and politicians that support the Palestinian cause, has been a figurehead of the resistance for decades, bringing hope to young Palestinians who dream of returning to their homeland. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Well, that's your world news for now. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
For those who spend their days operating within the constraints of empirical reality, the long-running voter fraud scam peddled by right-wing con artists poses a dilemma. The opinion article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalist Jesse Wegman, a member of the editorial board of the New York Times. He's also the author of the book Let the People Pick the President, the case for abolishing the Electoral College. The article is titled, Surprise, There's No Voter Fraud Again. For those who spend their days operating within the constraints of empirical reality, the long-running voter fraud scam peddled by right-wing con artists poses a dilemma. Respond to their claims and give them the veneer of legitimacy that they crave, or ignore them and risk letting transparent lies spread unchecked. I used to err on the side of responding as often as possible, in the belief that persistent fact-checking and debunking was the best way to inoculate the American public against a virulent campaign of deception. But it became clear to me, probably later than it should have, that this was always a fool's game. The professional vote fraud crusaders are not in the fact business. While they pretend to care about real election crimes, their purpose is not to identify whether voters are actually committing such crimes. It is to concoct a world in which the votes of certain people, and it always seems to be the same people, are presumptively invalid. That's why they're not chastened by data demonstrating, again and again and again, that there is essentially no voter fraud anywhere in this country. Thanks to their efforts, about three-quarters of Republicans believe the 2020 presidential election was stolen, and they won't be convinced by evidence to the contrary. That evidence continues to grow. Earlier this week, the Associated Press released an impressively thorough report examining every potential case of voter fraud in six decisive battleground states: Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, where Donald Trump and his allies challenged the result in 2020. Voters in these six states cast a combined 25.5 million votes for president last year and chose Joe Biden over Donald Trump by 311,257 votes. The total number of possible cases of fraud, the Associated Press found, well, fewer than 475, or 0.15% of Joe Biden's margin of victory in those states. Many of those cases the Associated Press identified turned out not to be fraud at all. Some involved a poll worker's error or a voter's innocent confusion, such as the Trump supporter in Wisconsin who mistakenly thought he could vote while on parole. "The guy upstairs knows what I did," the man said after a court appearance. "I didn't have any intention to commit election fraud." In the few instances of clear fraud, for example, a Pennsylvania man who cast two ballots, one for himself and later in disguise, one for his son, local authorities were quick to act. In Arizona, officials investigated 198 cases of potential fraud, most involving double voting. They invalidated virtually all of the second votes and have so far charged nine people with voting fraud crimes. That's the thing about voter fraud. Not only is it rare, it's generally easy to catch, especially if it happens on a large scale. In 2019, North Carolina officials ordered a do-over of a congressional election after the winning candidate's campaign was found to have financed an illegal voter turnout effort. That candidate was a Republican, as were two of three residents of The Villages, a Florida retirement community who were arrested and charged with double voting in the 2020 presidential election earlier this month. The third had no party affiliation. Given how much the Republicans bang on about the dangers of voter fraud, a little schadenfreude is in order here. But it misses the bigger point. To the extent there is any fraud, it is almost entirely an individual phenomena. The Associated Press report confirmed this, finding no evidence anywhere of a coordinated effort to commit voter fraud. That's no surprise. Committing a single case of fraud is hard enough. Doing so as part of a conspiracy is essentially impossible, once you consider how many people would need to be in on the scheme. "It's a staggeringly inefficient way to affect an outcome," said David Daley, the author of Unrigged: How Americans Are Battling Back to Save Democracy. It simply doesn't work. To sum up once more, for the folks in the cheap seats, voter fraud is vanishingly rare, it is virtually never coordinated, and when it does happen, it is often easily discovered and prosecuted by the authorities. I hold no illusions that any of these truths will matter to those who have invested themselves in tales of widespread voter fraud. After all, they weren't moved when both Republican and Democratic officials in states around the country reaffirmed, in some cases multiple times, the accuracy and integrity of their vote counts. Even Bill Barr, the former Attorney General and one of Donald Trump's most reliable bootlickers, could not bring himself to repeat the lie that there was any meaningful fraud in the 2020 presidential election. Alas, Republican voters don't listen to Bill Barr. They listen to Donald Trump, who dismissed the Associated Press's report by doing his standard Mafia Don impression. I just don't think you should make a fool out of yourself by saying 400 votes, the former president told the news organization, insisting that the true number of fraudulent votes in 2020 was in the, quote, hundreds of thousands, unquote. But what is Donald Trump's evidence? An unreleased report by a source that he refuses to name. This is how it goes with the vote fraud fraudsters. The damning evidence is always round, right around the next corner, or the one after that. Recall that Donald Trump established a voter fraud commission soon after he entered office, with the goal of rooting out the supposedly massive fraud that led him to lose the popular vote by nearly 3 million votes. Like everyone else, he knew that true democratic legitimacy comes not from the Electoral College, but rather from a majority of the American people. The commission was led by Kris Kobach, the indefatigable vote fraud warrior whom Mr. Daley once called an Inspector Clouseau who gazes into his mirror and seeks Sherlock Holmes. In Kris Kobach's previous job as Kansas's Secretary of State, he spent years hunting for widespread vote fraud and won only 9 convictions, most of them of older Republican men who had double voted. Under Kris Kobach's leadership, the Trump Voter Fraud Commission disbanded after less than a year of chaos and controversy without having made any findings. That's because, as the Associated Press report affirms once again, there was nothing to find. American voters aren't cheating, and certainly not in any coordinated way. And here lies the deepest irony of this strange, fragile moment we're living in. A very real threat is, in fact, looming over America's electoral integrity. But it's not coming from voters. It's coming from the people braying the loudest about the importance of election integrity. Donald Trump turned fact-free charges of voter fraud into an art form. But the exploitation of the predictable public fear generated by that sort of rhetoric has been a central feature of the Republican playbook for years. Back in 2013, the then North Carolina lawmaker, Thorne Tillis, explained why Republicans in the legislature were passing their strict voter ID law. There is some evidence of voter fraud, but that's not the primary reason for doing this, said Mr. Tillis, now a U.S. senator. There are a lot of people who are just concerned with the potential risk of fraud. Why are they so concerned? Because their leaders have been feeding them a steady diet of lies. That diet became an all-you-can-eat buffet in the Trump years, culminating in the Stop the Steal rallies after the 2020 presidential election, and then, horrifically, in the 6th of January riot at the U.S. Capitol. Now the same people who subscribe to the lies about election fraud are running for, and often winning, jobs overseeing the running of elections across the country. They are representative of a new generation of Republicans, raised in the fever swamps of Fox News and other purveyors of disinformation who believe elections are valid only when their candidate wins. The goal of the Voter Fraud Brigade, it turns out, was never to identify fraud that might have happened in the past. Rather, it was to indoctrinate voters with the terror of stolen elections and to pave the way for a hostile takeover of American democracy in the future.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and here is an admonition worth pondering upon from the noblest lady of all times, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, the daughter of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. You, the servants of Allah, are the ones to maintain His injunctions and prohibitions, as the carriers of His religion and His revelation, and the propagators of His religion among other nations.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
وَقَضَى رَبُّكَ أَلَّا تَعْبُدُوا إِلَّا إِيَّاهُ وَبِالْوَالِدَيْنِ إِحْسَانًا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity,
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir la'inur rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We are looking at humanity from the perspective of the commander of the faithful Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi assalam. One of the issues that we have when it comes to family is the right of children, and to be specific, when it comes to his right financially. And today we gave it a call, we gave it a name under the title of child support. Now, child support might be a new concept in the secular system, in the so-called advanced world, but in fact that is not new to us as Muslims. Where Islam has established the right of a child to financial advantages even before these systems think of it, over 1,000 years that system been established in Islam. Now with children, because they have special needs and because they cannot work and defend and do things for themselves, so Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala made it a requirement that we need to take of our children and we need to make sure that they are fed, clothed, and that they have enough money for their survival. Now, we see this happens a lot when we have divorces, where one of the parents neglects his job to pay for his child, especially when it comes to the man himself. And most of the times, as we see in these secular systems that we live in, one has to resort to going to court, or the woman has to resort to going to court to seek child support for her kids, where the father says, well, you know, with me no longer, then I don't see myself, you know, liable to pay for you or your child. Now, that's just a wrong mentality. Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi says that one must maintain and take care of his kids. Now, having said that, it is a matter of child support is a very sensitive issue. One of the problems that we face, especially in the secular system, that give women so much rights over a man, more than obviously what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has dictated. Now, Allah says, when it comes to the child himself, his well-being and his care and his maintenance and, you know, finances and everything in between is in fact the duty of the father. So the father has what we call the duty of care for his children. So he must be providing for his child, considering that the child is under his protection. So if the father is fine and, you know, logically he's okay, financially he's okay, then the mother has no business in taking that child from his dad, because he is the one who needs to maintain him. That's the law of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now, if we look at it in depth, well, we do say that child at a certain age stays with his mother, a girl at a certain age stays with her mother, but then they have to go back to the father. He's the one that needs to maintain them. If we break that chain, or the chain of command, or chain of sequence, chains of laws, then the system falls apart. Let us take a break and we continue right after.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity, and we are looking at the rights of a child when it comes to his finances. So we did say that Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayh, in a saying that seems to be a bit controversial, that he says, قِلَّةِ الْعِيَالِ أَحَدِ الْيَسَارِ, that if you do find yourself financially not capable to bring children and to have children and maintain them and sustain them, then you should not. That's what the hadith says. It says one of the easy ways to, you know, in life is to have less kids. So if you have 1, 2 kids, 3 kids, maybe more is not in your advantage, not for you, but for the kids themselves. Because we do see in so many countries with parents who have too many kids, they keep bringing them into life without knowing how to maintain them and how to take care of them. And most of the times, these kids end up being in the streets, these kids being orphans, or these kids being homeless, or what have you. And then, because of this, we had systems in place to even prevent people from having children in the first place. So we go into both extremes here. So we have, in some countries, birth control, where you've been told what you can and cannot have. You have, for example, in some countries, you're only allowed to have one child. For example, in China, in some countries, maybe allowed to have two, and so on and so forth. And you see, in certain countries, they might, you know, trying to propagate abortion and make it legal, and so on and so forth. If we went by the Islamic system, we wouldn't have these problems to begin with. So when one has too much kids, obviously he will find himself unable to sustain them. Now, we're not saying that one should not have children, or one should, you know, limit himself to one or two, children. No, have as much as you can, considering the fact that you can maintain them, you can care of them. Because sometimes you say, Allah will provide. Surely Allah will provide. But Allah will provide for those who think, for those who contemplate, not for those who do not think. When we look at some countries and we see so many kids in the streets and kids even being dragged into army and gangs and what have you, because the parents, they had no system in place. They don't know what to do with their kids. If you are financially very well off, if you have a house, you have everything else, and you know you want to have kids, by all means. But unless you have these things in place, then it's going to be a calamity, like Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi said. So the child himself has a responsibility, has a right that need to be maintained by his parents. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
صل يا ربي على طه الأمين رحمة أرسلته للعالمين وعلى آل النبي أجمعين فبهم نرجوك أحسن ختمنا.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Serving customers in a high-tech way. That's what a traditional restaurant in the German state of Bavaria does. What's the goal? The owner explains.
We decided ourselves for this robot because of the lack of staff. Looked for support in a technological form. It's not a replacement, of course, but it's a relief for the waiters.
The robot is equipped with a trolley and it can easily move around in the restaurant. When it comes to saving time, the high-tech waiters is of great help, especially when the restaurant is packed with customers. The owner says most customers first become surprised when they come across the robot. He says waiters are still present to serve meals and receive orders. Butterfly gardens are a place where you can watch these tiny creatures and marvel at their beauty. But have you ever wondered where these butterflies come from? These colorful creatures are in fact bred in butterfly farms. And Donald Orsay from Costa Rica is one of the biggest breeders, making that the mission of his life. He produces somewhere around 2,500 pupas per week. Orsay is one of the world's largest exporters of the popular Morpho species. Listen to him explain why he is fascinated by them.
A morpho has a great advantage. It is a butterfly that rarely stays still, unless it is very late, because when it is getting dark, it settles down, but normally it flies constantly. It flies by in the butterfly gardens.
Arce's butterflies have their own special diet. They feed on bananas and a concoction that he keeps its ingredients secret. Morphos are popular because of their color. They are shimmering blue on one side and brown on the other side. That's perfect for camouflage. Butterflies are really fun to watch, but they serve a critical purpose as well. They help plants reproduce by pollination, thus strengthening the ecosystem.
A few hooks and a shelf have transformed a wall in the Swedish capital, Stockholm, into an outdoor charity. It's called the Wall of Kindness, which is painted with the slogan, grab a jacket if you need one, leave a jacket if you can spare one. Here people can donate their winter clothes or warm boots if they have some extra. The Wall of Kindness is meant to help those in need, including the homeless, to stay warm. The wall was set up by a real estate company, and the organizer says people have responded positively with the high turnover. The move was inspired by a trend that has been seen in Iran over the years. Several other countries across the world, such as India, have also organized similar outdoor charities.
Scientists in Brazil have come up with a creative way to shore up the population of a majestic species of monkeys in danger of extinction. Brazilian conservationists have constructed a bridge to reconnect the two sides of Rio de Janeiro's Atlantic forest. The road had effectively isolated a group of lion tamarins, but now it offers hope for the endangered monkey. There are only 2,500 golden tamarins left in the wild, all of them in Brazil. It is estimated that these animals have lost more than 95% of their habitat.
Childhood joy and lightness meet with art at the first of its kind museum in Rome, Italy. Here, all kinds of art decorations are made of balloons. The exhibit, dubbed Let's Fly, displays a broad range of interactive artworks. In one installation, visitors are invited to find their inner child by diving into a pool of hundreds of small balloons. In another section, giant inflatable sculptures double as a playground for kids. Some installations move only by riding a bicycle. The museum is a place where artists and spectators coexist for a journey into a world of inflatable art capable of feeding the imagination of all ages.
It's the combination of art with childhood and adolescence that makes this place so magical. So they are art installations, but also games. The blurred line between the two is what makes the museum so unique.
The balloon exhibit incorporates innovative works created by 14 different artists from across Europe. The artifacts were created using hundreds of thousands of biodegradable balloons. The organizers say they want to increase environmental awareness by being eco-friendly, as all the artworks will be reused or recycled. The exhibit will run until March the 5th.
As people around the globe are preparing for the New Year holidays, the Vatican lights up a Christmas tree and nativity scene set up on St. Peter's Square. People gathered around the square waiting for long hours to see the illumination. Even heavy rain did not stop them. That's while the official lighting ceremony was held inside the Paul VI Hall, where Pope Francis presides his weekly audiences. The nativity scene, made of more than 30 pieces, is created by Peruvian artists. The majestic Christmas tree is about 28 meters and comes from Andalo, northern Italy. The locals see the stunning tree as a symbol of hope and peace. The tree will be switched on every night until January the 6th. Chinese students receive a science lesson on their country's space station, and they are lucky enough to receive it firsthand from the astronauts living in the first and core module of the station. The class was held via a live broadcast shown on the state television. The three astronauts gave a lecture that focused on physics. They explained how the weightlessness environment affects the movement of objects. The astronauts also gave a tour of the station they arrived at in October for a six-month stay. It seems that their teachings were quite motivating. The students peppered their instructors with questions, including those about living conditions in space. China launched its space station in April and plans to complete it by the end of the next year.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields
like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Christmas is just around the corner, and children are waiting for their presents. In Guatemala, Santa Claus has a new mode of transport to give gifts to children with cancer.
Today, as in the past year, we are celebrating Christmas with the cancer patients of the shelter. Santa Claus came in a helicopter to give presents to the children. It is very emotional for the children. The majority of them have never been so close to a helicopter, let alone Santa Claus.
That was an exciting experience for the children. The charity event was organized by an institute that supports cancer patients for remote areas in Guatemala. The institute says the event aimed to help the children go through their therapies with more ease. The Amazon River turtles are in danger of extinction, but environmentalists have come up with an initiative to save their lives, and that's by protecting their eggs. Climate change and human activities against their ecosystem have been putting these creatures at risk. Now, what the biologists and local volunteers do is that they recover the turtle nests from riverbanks during the rainy season to protect them from drowning. Then they take care of the baby turtles until they develop a hard shell and are ready to start their life journey. Batches of tiny turtles release into a river in the Amazon border between Bolivia and Brazil. They are now grown enough to protect themselves against different threats. Environmentalists have been doing this for more than 20 years, saving millions of baby turtles. This time they released 1 million of the little turtles. During the Christmas season, people around the world love to add a dose of joy in the form of Santas. Children especially feel ecstatic to see Santas distributing presents and snacks. But you'll be amazed to see how one Santa this time dives into water to give well-behaved sharks and fishes their goodies. In Malta's National Aquarium, Scuba Claus, helped by an elf, plunges into a huge fish tank with his sack of treats to feed sharks and fishes. Santas, ho ho ho, come out in bubble through his snorkel over his white beard. The aquarium, located in the northern part of the island, hosts more than 175 different species of various marine animals.
Butterflies are probably the most popular among all insect species on Earth due to their beauty and color. Millions of monarch butterflies have flocked to a Mexican forest, creating a magical sight, drawing tourists, scientists, and locals there. The monarch butterflies flee the cold winters of Canada and northern United States and travel thousands of kilometers to hibernate and reproduce in the temperate woods of central Mexico. Hundreds of trees crowded with butterflies can be seen along Mexico's 13,000-hectare monarch reserve after their long journey. However, experts warn of a drop in the number of the species. Climate change is reported to have had an impact on their butterflies' migration pattern, as well as a reduction in their milkweed breeding habitat in the United States.
With the Christmas season in full swing, hundreds have gathered on Spain's Gran Canaria island to watch stunning sand sculptures representing the birth of Christ. Eight sand artists from around the world have created the spectacular figures. It took them a week to complete the scenes. A huge sand wall is built around the sculptures to protect them. The island has been holding the event every year since 2006. The warm temperatures on the Spanish beach have helped attract a lot of visitors over Christmas. According to the organizers, at least 200,000 people have visited the exhibition in the past 15 years. A joyful day at an Australian zoo as a baby pygmy hippo is born. That's good news for the zoo staff because pygmy hippos are endangered species. Kambiri, the mother hippo, gave birth to the calf last month. It's her second calf and the first one was born in a Sydney zoo 4 years ago. The newborn is yet to be named. It sticks to the mum and follows her wherever she goes. The calf is spending most of its time out of the sight of the public. As for now, it's learning to walk and swim, and the mum keeps a close eye on the calf at all times.
The first few days, she did not leave the calf's side, was very sedate, very quiet, and just looking after its every need. And only in the last sort of couple of days, as she started to get a little bit more sleep in.
They are regarded as endangered animals because of illegal hunting and loss of habitat. Currently, less than 3,000 pygmy hippos are living in the wild.
Is it interesting to experience what Harry Potter went through at Hogwarts? Well, it could be, at least for students at a university in Pakistan kicking off a festival celebrating the fictional wizard. The students at Government College University made their 150-year-old campus look like the magical school created by British author J.K. Rowling. They put on costumes and set up decorations reminiscent of Hogwarts. The university's vice chancellor says the campus, with its vast halls and soaring archways, has always reminded the students of the fictional school.
Most of these youngsters, they grew up at the time when J.K. Rowling's work was being presented in the novels and then later on in the film. So that magical charm, that fantasy, they really enjoyed. They grew up reading that fantasy. And then when they come to Government College University and see these architecture, it reminds me of that Hogwarts that is being filmed in Harry Potter films.
The university official spoke proudly of what his students have done. They were themselves happy too, calling their experience fun. Others said it was unbelievable to be in Hogwarts. The festival also screened Pakistan's first fan-made Harry Potter film made and acted by the students.
Voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
What did Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham say about the 6th of January rioting at the United States Capitol? And when did they say it? Were they suitably censorious of the violence? At the time, did their public remarks match their private horror? The opinion article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalist Frank Bruni, a contributing opinion writer with more than 25 years' experience. The article is titled, "The Line from Fox News to Trump's Big Lie is Short and Direct." Did Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham say about the 6th of January rioting at the United States Capitol? And when did they say it?